Welcome to the Guffin Men. I'm Alex. With me is James.
Hello.
Just before we get started, we just want you to check out our website, themacguffinmen.com. Also, follow us on Twitter, at themacguffinmen. All one word, MacGuffin spelled MacGuffin. Also, subscribe to us on iTunes. If you like this podcast, then you'll probably like the majority of our podcasts. So search us on iTunes, The MacGuffin Men, again, all one word, just like the Twitter handle. Click subscribe. Also rate us if you can so that other people can find out that we exist and then also listen to us. But yeah.
Don't be greedy and keep us to yourselves.
Exactly. Don't do that. So let's just get right to it, James.
Okay.
Welcome to the MacGuffin Men. This episode is brought to you by Javier Bardem's villainous haircuts. Don't act like the sugar didn't get as popular as the Rachel in your hair salon. And now, here are Alex and James.
All right. You ready to go, Alex?
I am, yeah.
All right. We've got an activity right off the bat.
Okay, great. I'm excited.
Okay. We're going to do a quick game of word associations.
Okay.
You ready?
Yes.
Music.
The Roots.
Bananas.
Pandas.
Skyfall.
Rosebud.
Took you way too long to think of one for music, by the way.
I know, right?
You know how word association.
I was like looking around and I somehow could not find any music paraphernalia in my room, despite the fact that whatever, it doesn't matter.
And pandas don't eat bananas.
I assumed as much. Okay. Your Skype picture has a panda, all right? I'm not quick on the draw, right?
Yeah, but now people are going to be able to find out who I am.
No, that's not how they find you on Skype.
Sure.
You don't search panda and find you.
Okay, well, if you couldn't tell by our quick game word association.
Yeah.
We were talking about Citizen Kane today.
Absolutely we are.
No, we're not.
No, no, we're not.
We're talking about Skyfall.
Yes, yes, we are.
The newest James Bond film.
Correct.
Number 23.
All right.
Or 26, depending if you want to count the ones that no one counts.
Like what?
Woody Allen's Casino Royale.
Yeah.
Never Say Never Again.
Okay.
Which has Sean Connery, but isn't considered canonical.
See, I don't get that. I would count that one.
Yeah, they don't.
Okay.
The Bond heads don't, so.
Okay. Well, they probably care about Bond more than I do, so I'll let them have it.
They sure do.
Yeah. And what's the other one?
It's called Climax !! Casino Royale. And
awesome.
It was a television movie, I believe.
I'd watch that.
Yeah, I just want the days of extensive use of punctuation in movie titles to come back.
Yeah, we all do, James. We all do.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you said that you don't really care that much for Bond. How'd you care for Skyfall?
I liked it. I thought it was really, really good.
Yeah?
I liked it a lot.
Good.
Yes.
I liked it too. I just didn't know how much you'd like it.
No, I saw it twice, and after the first time I saw it, I was trying really hard to think of the last blockbuster I enjoyed as much as I enjoyed Skyfall.
Really?
And I think I didn't do extensive research, like a lot of thinking. Like I saw it both times this afternoon, so I haven't put too much thought into it. But I think it was The Dark Knight was the last blockbustery movie I enjoyed as much as I like Skyfall.
That's good.
Yeah, not that I don't like Skyfall as much as The Dark Knight, but just something that sort of just made me as happy as this did. Yeah, you know? I was just very, very pleased.
Good.
Yeah.
Solid
9 Skyfalls out of Skyfall.
And now, out of those 9 Skyfalls, how many of those Skyfalls were earned just by Adele doing the song?
I think all of the Skyfalls.
All the falls?
Yeah, all of the falls from the sky. No, I thought who better to choose to do the theme song right now, right?
No, it's just those songs are never good.
So, yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't find Adele songs good, so a combination of an artist I don't really enjoy that much in a little subgenre that I don't enjoy that much doesn't do much for me, oddly enough.
Well, the song exists for you to sit through for 5 minutes with some pretty pretty cool graphics going on as well. So, I mean, it's not
okay. I think that's a good place to start.
At the beginning? Yes, let's do that.
Let's go right to the beginning with the opening action sequence.
Okay.
I was a big fan.
I liked it. Yes.
Yes. Very cool. Yeah. Kind of Bourne Ultimatum-y with the rooftops.
Yeah.
But that's not a problem for me.
Nope.
I really enjoyed the motorcycles on the rooftops, though. That really one-upped the Bournes.
Yes, absolutely.
And the whole thing with the crane and what do you want to call that? Big cat machine.
Yeah.
with the train sequence. That was all very enjoyable.
Yes, absolutely.
And yeah, that was a good action sequence to start everything off. And then we get into the title sequence.
No. Before that, we get some horrible decision making.
Okay, such as?
Like, okay, she's... I guess Emma, we can call her. She's Moneypenny, but we found that out at the end. But
why do you call her Emma?
Isn't that her first name? Or Eve?
Eve.
Right? Okay. Yeah, sorry. Eve. She's like, look, I'm being very clear here that I do not think I will get the shot. You've got a great agent who is currently in contact with the person, like literally touching the person he gets to. And Emma's just like, take the shot. Like, what?
That's how valuable that list is, though.
Yeah, I guess. The knock list.
Well, it's you lose one agent. You know, she explains it pretty well.
Yeah, no, I know. And it's explained with Javier Bardem's character later as well. But
yes.
I just think, like, I don't know. There's a 50% chance that Naomi Harris is not hitting that shot.
No, I'd say it's much smaller than 50%. And she's very upfront about that and not having a clean shot.
Exactly.
And then being very sad as he gets away on the train.
Yeah. Like, it was such an idiotic idea that, like, when I first saw that trailer, I was like, whoa, why is M trying to kill Bond? Like, that is what I took away from that trailer. I assumed that shot was from going into this movie. I assumed that was on purpose and that for some reason MI6 wanted to kill Bond. And I was very surprised to find out that was not the case.
No, just bad shooting.
Yeah.
In a horrible situation.
Yeah, but title sequence.
Title sequence.
Yeah.
Do you find it, like, it's weird because this point will probably come up again. There's a bunch of stuff in the Bond franchise that they need to do. And I think that people who really like Bond, once they start taking away these elements, are going to get upset and say this is when it, you know, sold out or jumped the shark or whatever term you want to use.
Mm-hmm. Skied the fall.
Skied the fall. but I find these title sequences are just so outdated and painful to sit through.
Okay.
Am I alone on this?
I'm sure you're not alone. I'm sure you're in the majority. I mean
of the MacGuffin men.
yes. I like title sequences. I like seeing credits isolated from the action. I thought, like, there were parts of this that were super cool, like him falling at the beginning and going down the hole and all that stuff. I thought that was really cool, and I think it's this really enjoyable sort of vague graphical interpretation of what you're going to see happen in the movie. And yeah. I like that. I just like opening credit sequences, not because they're sort of a throwback. I just sort of like... I like seeing opening credits before the movie, but I don't like having to focus on them and the actual action of the movie at the same time. I do wish more movies did that. And it's also sort of just a cool design thing that you can throw in. And yeah. 3 minutes out of 143, not a huge waste of time, you know?
Okay. So. Yeah, that's fair.
Mm-hmm. But I do think, like, the average person is more on your side of that than I.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I'm average. I get it. No, that's fine. It's fine. So by this point, Bond is dead as far as MI6 is concerned.
Yes.
which is going to make it really awkward when they get to Mission Impossible 6, but let's not focus on that yet.
There's no colon in MI6, but there will be a colon in MI6.
But there is a hoodie.
Yeah, there's always a hoodie now.
I saw this movie twice too, and it still cracks me up is the James Bond stubble to show that he's like so ragged. Yeah. It's like literally as little hair as you can have growing out of your skin. Yep. And then like perfectly groomed. I don't know. That part made me laugh every time.
Yeah. Now he's got stubble. He drinks with scorpions on his hands.
Not the band, the Scorpions, but some weird drinking game they do in a country I don't know.
Yeah.
Let's talk about M.
Okay.
Who, because I've seen most of the Bond movies,
mm-hmm.
and some of the later Pierce Brosnan ones I didn't see.
Okay.
I really loved how they used M in this one and how they kind of fleshed her out to be a real character.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Yeah, that made me really happy. And I don't know if that was kind of something they started doing more that I just don't remember or what the deal is. Because, I mean, they have Dame Judi Dench.
Yes.
You know, I don't want to let that go to waste.
No, no, you don't.
So, but I feel like this is kind of the first time that she had this much of a character.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I'm no Bond scholar. I certainly don't remember her having a big, like, huge part in any of the movies she's been in, other than sort of like, here's your mission, Bond. That's my horrible Judi Dench impression, apparently.
That was really, Judi Dench's voice is not that much deeper than your voice.
No, no. Anyway, but no, and I remember them doing more with her since Daniel Craig has come on board. But I'm not confident about this. Again, no scholar of the Bond films.
Yeah, well, I just, even, especially in the first, I mean, in the first 20 and the last 20 minutes of the movie, I guess, we get a lot of her, I thought, being used really well. And the scene with her and Mallory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rafe.
What was that for?
It's for Rafe Fiennes, man.
Big Rafe fan.
Oh, he's killer in this movie.
Rafe-all? Yeah, no, he was good. But I really like the scene of those two together. And she's very, you know, cold and good and is a somewhat dynamic female character in a franchise that isn't known for that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And she's tough almost to the point of, like, tough not making sense at times. Yeah. But, I mean, I feel the same way about Bond as well. So,
yeah. Yeah. I know, and you see kind of moments of, like, warmth between the two of them, but then, well, you're not sleeping here. Just
yeah.
Very, very cold and
yeah, brash, it's still so. Always combative.
Yeah. Okay, so there's M. What about the new Q?
The new Q? Oh, yeah, I liked him. I like Ben Whishaw, though. So.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked him. He's, like, sufficiently nerdy for the millennium.
Yeah. And it's sufficiently quippy for these this movie.
For the franchise. Yeah. All right. And then I guess the one last person we really need to talk about would be Silva.
Yes.
Javier Bardem, as they say in Spanish.
Okay.
Fan?
Yeah, I liked him. I mean, I didn't think it was anything to write home about. He was anything to write home about, but I liked him.
Good.
Yeah. Not that I write home often.
Nothing to podcast home about.
Yeah, exactly.
Because we're so tech like that. Okay, and I guess the visuals, we'll let you cover that one if you want.
How much time do we have? Because, oh my God.
Yeah?
Oh, it's too real. Too real, man.
It's your boy Roger, right?
Oh, yeah. It's my boy. My God, just... cancel the Best Cinematography Oscar this year. It's a wrap. This movie was bonkers.
You
visually.
Actually think so?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. I'm not going to disagree with you right now. I just don't know how serious you are sometimes.
It was so gorgeous. Like, everything was just the prettiest thing. It was the best. Like, yeah, I would watch this movie on mute, man. Like, it was just so well shot and just silhouettes everywhere. And the lighting is all, like, red or blue lighting. And it's all... and it also tied into the themes of the movie a lot, which I enjoy. Also, would you care to guess my favorite shot of the movie?
I'm going to list a couple out loud that I think they are.
Okay.
And then maybe I'll try to narrow it down.
Because there are like 100 good answers to this question, but
Bond just falling after he gets shot.
Okay.
There's one near the end. Yeah, I guess everything between them taking their tunnel and walking to the cabin or a little chapel thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Lots of that stuff.
I was
and I can't pinpoint exact moments, but I remember a lot of that being very, very good looking.
Yes, absolutely. The shot I'm thinking of is the one take silhouette fight, which is the best.
Which one?
Where they're in Shanghai and I think Patrice assassinates the guy who is looking at the painting, and then Bond fights him.
Oh, yes.
And first, the parts of that leading up to that fight where he's like sneaking up on him and hiding in reflections and stuff, cool. Yes. And then after that, when they start fighting and he's like falling out the window, grabs the gun to pull himself back in. And then there's just this long take of a steady cam sort of tracking in on them. And they're just purely in silhouette, except for a couple times where the gun fires and there's just some red light on them. And it's awesome. Like, it is the coolest shot. Like, I was afraid I was going to tear up. It was so cool. Like, I was just so pleased. But, yeah.
So Roger Deakins, cinematographer, does it again for you.
Yeah, I think I'll come back to it. But because there are things that tie in with the themes when we talk about them, I'll bring that back. But, yeah, no, give him the Oscar now. Cancel that category this year.
Okay, there's nothing else you really like this year?
It's a joke compared to this. Like, I haven't looked through everything else, but like all the movies I've loved this year so far haven't had great cinematography, so
okay.
Yeah,
well, that'd be cool if a Bond movie got a cinematography award.
Oh, it'd be, well, I mean, Inception won for Wally Pfister, but I mean, he should have won for The Dark Knight instead.
Oh, so. Is that a Bond movie?
No.
Oh, then shut just, the fuck up.
Okay.
Great.
Deakins is already Hollywood royalty, so it wouldn't be surprising. So
true. And this is a Sam Mendes movie, so
yes,
that'll get love, right?
Yeah, well, he is a prestige director, I guess you could call him. And yeah, no, it's good work, Sam.
Yeah, and critics are giving this some love. Good scores on the aggregate sites too, but critics are really flocking to this movie with positive reviews, eh?
I honestly don't know. I haven't looked it up. I was away for the last few days and kind of like off the grid, and I just haven't looked up reviews. But I trust, after watching this movie, I assumed critics liked it.
Yeah, they did. I mean, surprisingly so. I mean, I thought this was a good movie. I didn't think it was as good as a lot of critics are saying it was.
Okay.
Which, surprised me. I thought it would be more of a, you know, this is a pretty good action movie and there's more genuine characterization and warmth in this than I thought there would be, but people are kind of just calling it just an overall good movie, not just a good genre movie. So
yeah, I think it's a good overall movie.
Well, do you want to talk about some of those themes then, about kind of what elevates this beyond, you know, what might be getting it this critical love outside of an action movie?
Yeah, well, there is a lot. There's a lot of stuff in it.
Yes.
Okay, well, here are things. I'm just
I saw a boat. I saw a motorcycle.
Yep.
Computer.
Various alcohol.
A very nice cardigan on Mr. Wishaw.
Okay, so here are themes that are discussed a lot throughout the movie, or focused on a lot throughout the movie. Family, shadows, time, technology, mirrors, underground / rats, fire and ice as well. That's something that's very present in the cinematography. Everything is lit very, very like warm and very, I don't know, like fire or very blue, like very cold and blue, which I thought was
yeah.
Super
and
cool.
as you pointed out, there's a lot of red and blue coloring, and it's not just when they're showing literal ice or fire.
Yeah, but exactly. Even though the climactic sequence of this movie involves both a lot of ice and a lot of fire, which I thought was very cool. And yeah, no, it's just a lot of these things, like very broad themes that just sort of aren't really fully, you know, aren't sort of discussed in detail, but just sort of add an extra element of gravitas to the movie. Just sort of make you feel like, yeah, this movie is trying something. It's not sort of trying to get too in depth with things, but I like it.
Yeah. And when it has motifs like that, it does just seem very complete and well thought out. And, you know, it has these reoccurring elements, even if it's something as vague as underground or something like that. When when you see it repeat like that and not in a, you know, redundant, repetitive way, but when things come up like that, it does kind of feel like this was something well thought out and planned.
Yeah, exactly. And that's something I love about the movie is all of these things just sort of showing up in so many places, like the cinematography, the set design, the fact that MI6 moves underground, the use of mirrors in the shots, the use of silhouettes constantly, because these are people hiding in the shadows or doing their work in the shadows. I love all the silhouettes in this movie. Because they all tie back into the plot, and I think that's always nice in film or cinematography in general to tie your visuals into the themes of the movie.
Yes, and we are both big fans of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've said that many times.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
Yes, this one is certainly one that fits that category well, so it's worth bringing up again.
Mm-hmm. And just everything, and I don't know, it's all just such a nice, cohesive movie. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't feel much emotion throughout the movie, but it's a movie that can be enjoyed as a standard action movie. And if you think about things tying together, it also works. And I like that.
Yeah.
One big theme throughout the movie is the difference, or technology and time, like the way those things sort of work together, and also Bond sort of, I guess we can call it a resistance to change, sort of. Like, he's a very old school type man. He talks down about technology pretty often throughout the movie. And you know how, like, the funny thing about this movie to me, as far as it relates to technology and age, is like, it was like Die Hard 4, but done like a Bond movie.
Yeah.
Just sort of the way the villain uses technology for their end game, and the way that it's an iconic character. Obviously, Die Hard, John McClane is an iconic character in North America. I don't know if that translates worldwide. I doubt it does. Bond is clearly a more iconic character worldwide.
Yeah.
But just sort of the way it takes sort of this sort of classical manliness type of thing, and sort of shows this character not afraid to adapt, but unwilling to adapt to a modern age, and having to fight against something like technology. I thought that was cool. Like, I liked it in Die Hard 4, and I like it here as well.
Yeah, well,
and that's all summed up in the boat discussion with where Bond first meets Q.
The boat discussion?
Where they talk about the painting of the boat.
Oh, right. Yes. I understand now.
Yeah. Not when he is with Super Fox Mega Babe on the boat, the Chimera.
That's her name. I was trying to remember.
Yeah.
Well, no, I think that you're right. And this has a lot to do with change altogether. And even just from the commercials in the trailers, we get this theme of resurrection coming through.
Yes. Bond very specifically saying the word resurrection.
Yeah, and you know, that happens a lot. And I mean, we get him going back to his childhood home and kind of it being destroyed, and him, you know, coming out of the ashes almost literally at a point.
Yeah.
Coming out of the rubble, at least. And
with his stubble.
With his stubble. Skyfall stubble.
Yeah.
And I think that was a really...
Hey, James, what do you call it when you shave?
I don't know.
Stubble fall.
I guess. Anyway, yeah. Back to the real point I was making.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's... In a lot of ways, this movie is about, you know, kind of going back to where you came from and kind of restarting from there. And I think it's interesting, especially right by the very end of the movie, which is great. The epilogue at the end.
Yeah.
Those last like 3 minutes, I think, are some of the best in the whole movie.
Okay.
This kind of feels like it should have been Daniel Craig's first Bond in a way.
Maybe. Yeah. No, I see that argument. It makes
it's. Sorry. I mean, maybe it's harder to do on your first one, and maybe people would have kind of rejected such a huge reboot right away. Mm-hmm. But we get a new M, we get a new Moneypenny, we get a new Q, and there are tons of things that just, I mean, this idea of, you know, going back to where you started and resurrection, and, you know, changing so much of your past, and, you know, still coming out to do what you have to do. That's such a huge theme in this. And, you know, with Bond really literally going back to his family home is one thing, and it being destroyed and him, you know, having to fight through it. But the Aston Martin, you know, very classic Bond, you know, one of the most famous Bond cars, that Aston Martin that he takes M into.
Yeah, people applauded when that showed up the first time.
Yeah, I know. People gasped, and I was like, it's not the Batmobile, but yeah. I think it
occupies
the same place for some people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The ejecting seat jokes were very funny.
That was very funny. But when people see that car, there's a definite, like, emotional response to it. And then when that car gets destroyed, there's a shot of Bond, like, really caring a lot, to the point where I thought I was missing something. Like, did he think M was in there? Is there something that they needed from that? And it was very much about the destruction of the old Bond franchise, I thought. Mm-hmm. And, like, really retooling it or rethinking it or rebooting it, or however you want to say it. I think, like, yeah, the car being destroyed, you know, the family house, things like that. I don't know. It just seemed like this, and the introduction of all those new characters at the end, and the death of Judi Dench's version of M, whatever you want to call that. It just felt very, you know, hit the reset button on it.
Yeah, I think I agree with your points. What they tried to do with Casino Royale, as far as the reboot aspect of it, was Eva Green's character, whose name I do not recall. It was sort of Bond sort of finding love, and the idea that her being taken away by her dying is what sort of inspires him to keep doing this work. And they, again, kind of changed that in this movie. It's sort of, because this movie implies that he's a secret agent because he couldn't help his parents. So he's trying to do something by being a 00 agent. And his M is sort of his surrogate mother, in that he actually calls her mom.
Within probably about a minute and a half of this movie's time.
Yeah, and not just in this movie, like he did in previous movies as well.
Yeah.
But he's throughout the whole movie is about him trying to save her, and he fails. And the idea at the end of the movie is that when he gets the bulldog, it's sort of telling him, it's reminding him that he still failed. He still hasn't saved the people that he needs to save. So it sort of reinspires or reinvigorates him to continue doing his work. Like, there's a reason for him to keep doing this, even though he continues to fail the tests. Like, he has to keep working at this until he succeeds, until he saves the people he wants to save, even though those people keep dying. Like,
yeah. And even if he doesn't even know who these people he has to save, you know, it's people he hasn't met. It's people who aren't even targets yet, but he feels this drive after not being able to help his real parents, not being able to ever save M. Mm-hmm. He just feels that drive to keep going.
Yeah, absolutely. And even to a lesser extent, seemingly pretty much every Bond girl that ends up in these movies.
Yeah.
I mentioned Ava Green's character. What's her name? Severin in this movie. She doesn't. Yep. She doesn't have much to do. It's not like she is inspiring him. He moves on pretty quickly after her death. But yeah, and it's just sort of all of these people that he can't save inspire him to try and save others.
Yeah, and I think it's a really sweet line when he gets the bulldog, and Moneypenny says, you know, maybe it's her way of saying get a desk job, and he said, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but it's just the opposite or something along those lines.
Yeah, exactly. She's suggesting you get a desk job. She's like, no, she's suggesting the opposite. And
yeah, if you ever did have a desk, you would put this on it, and I would be sitting here the whole time reminding you that you did not save my life.
Exactly.
Get out there and go save somebody else's.
Exactly.
And I love that it's, you know, a British bulldog, and it ties in. I mean, he's so tied in with England and has been forever, and, you know, is a English icon and creation and things like that. And kind of a uniquely British modern icon. I mean, we have tons of British figures that we know, but outside of the royal family and stuff, what's a really famous modern British creation? Like Hobbit stuff? I don't know. That's all I can really come up with. So, I mean, for like the action, famous action icons are usually so often American or, you know, Hollywood, that it's important that this is always tied up with the British thing.
Yeah.
And even with Anne being mom and, you know, tied up with the Queen Mother and all these things, like, there's just a bunch of stuff that is integrally British about it. And I like that the Bulldog tied in with all that stuff, too.
I agree.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. have you heard any of the Dark Knight comparisons?
Actually, after watching this movie, I assumed you would, because this is a note I have written down. Die Hard 4 constructed like The Dark Knight with a little bit of Bourne Ultimatum thrown in.
And
right up to the third act appearance by Albert Finney.
And a dash of Home Alone.
Okay. Just a dash of Home Alone. Which I get that instantly.
Which is being underappreciated, I feel.
I knew you would love that stuff, but when they're sort of rigging the house, I'm a big fan of that.
I didn't understand why they were so restricted to what they had in the house. Like, I feel like they knew they had a pretty decent head start.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Like, it seemed like they were waiting there for a really long time.
They did seem to be pretty isolated, so I don't know how far away they were from things, but...
Yeah, but I mean, they drove from London to Scotland. You'd think they'd pass something, but...
A lot of things that are kind of nonsensical happen in this movie, so let's just let it be.
All right, moving on. Let it be. British Beatles reference. I like it.
Yep, this podcast has to be integrally British.
Anyway, so how do you, what was the Dark Knight stuff you picked up on then?
The same things everybody's probably picking up on, Silva has sort of constructed this crazy web of things that also requires him being captured and being taken into the belly of the beast, only to escape and then pull off his real plan.
Yes.
But not after, not until he gives a lengthy monologue and...
of course.
And in his first scene has a good old conversation with Bond. And I mentioned fire and ice being used a lot in the cinematography. And that's sort of the idea with Bond and Silva. It's that they are fire and ice.
And the one of the things that, you know, is talked about very specifically in Dark Knight about, you know, them kind of being two sides of the same coin.
Exactly.
You know, they're both 00 agents that M favored for a long time. And, you know, one of them took it one way, one of them took it the other way.
And that's
not to say that Bond or Batman or Bruce Wayne took it the really... clearly selfless way, you know, like, he does good in a way, but it's certainly not out of the goodness of his heart.
Agreed.
And talked about, he's more just compelled to do it out of some weird childhood trauma involving his parents.
Dead parents. That's what a lot of the mirror, well, that's what all of the mirror imagery in the movie is meant to be, just sort of Silva is a reflection of sorts of Bond, and that's why we see Bond seeing his reflection a lot, and reflection of other agents as well, like Patrice. I mentioned that there's a lot of reflections in that sequence. I liked them together. I liked the rats monologue. Like, I just enjoyed all of the stuff where they're talking about rats and then proceed to spend a lot of the movie underground. But no, the comparisons with the Dark Knight, don't even just stop there. Like, the movie is constructed very much like someone was writing this movie next to a copy of The Dark Knight at all times.
Yeah.
This feels like the first movie where I feel a lot of where the Dark Knight's influence is really, really felt. And I like that the Dark Knight is now a super influential movie. But no, it's just the way particularly the escape, not even that is sort of very similar to the Joker's escape in the Dark Knight, but that it is even sort of cut the same way. Well, we know, or we have an idea that Silva is going to M while M is giving this monologue, and those two scenes are intercut with like Bond chasing Silva is intercut with M at the what is that called? What would we call that? Hearing?
Yeah. I think they do use a different term for it.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure they do, but we'll call it for our purposes a hearing, and just the way that's intercut.
Oh, no, in Britain, it's a sky falling.
Oh, okay, sky falling.
That's what it is.
But no, and just the way, like, the way M is sort of just like, and my late husband liked poetry, so I'm going to recite this, and it's just very, the way that voiceover is sort of intercut with the action sequence that's going on. Not really a voiceover, but it's sort of used as a voiceover for parts of the action sequence. That's, and even sort of the way the camera is coming in on her, like she's giving a big, powerful Alfred monologue. Very, very Dark Knight inspired, and even just the cast of characters in this movie is very Dark Knight inspired. Albert Finney is a very Alfred-y character.
Instead of being the old servant, he was the old game warden or something like that.
Yeah.
Gamekeeper.
And you can use M as a stand-in for Commissioner Gordon pretty easily. You can use Q as Lucius even more easily.
I've got one. Bond for Batman.
Nailed it. Really nailed it. I recognize the Bond property predates the a lot of the characters that end up in Batman. The comparisons are rampant. And even parts of the music, like when Bond grabs onto the bottom of that elevator when he's chasing Patrice.
Yeah.
By the way, in case you haven't picked it up, I really love all the stuff, that sequence with Patrice in Shanghai. When he catches the elevator, that music sounds very, very much like the Batman theme.
And there's a cool action sequence in a tall building in Shanghai.
Yeah. No, I know. Yeah. I'm telling you.
And
it's next to a copy of The Dark Knight. And just the cinematography, I think, in this movie is probably just, I mean, percentage-wise, there's a higher percentage of just gorgeous shots in this movie. But cinematography is used sort of in the same way as it was in The Dark Knight. The influence on The Dark Knight the influence of The Dark Knight on this movie cannot be understated.
Overstated,
sorry.
It's okay.
It can be understated. And
it
I
can
will,
be.
I will step to you if it is.
I mean, Javier even looks a little jokery at times. Like, he's got the fucked up mouth. There's that shot of him that we saw before the movie with his hair all wild and the fire behind him.
Yeah.
That looks like it just could have been taken out of Dark Knight.
Yep.
He dresses up as a cop at one point.
Yeah, that's true. I forgot that.
And there's that shot of him in the car through the window that really reminded me of it as well.
Yeah. Well, that car, are you talking about towards the beginning of The Dark Knight? Like when they're going to the bank heist? Because that's the scene it reminded me of when I saw him in the car. Like when he's loading the gun, prepping
too.
For the... Yeah. Because he's not like hanging out the window or anything. But it's almost crazy how much Dark Knight is in this movie.
And he kind of at least attempts to commit suicide, which is part of this movie I didn't really like.
Okay.
But yeah, that kind of lined up nicely too.
Yeah, a key difference, we're comparing him to the Joker, but there are definite differences. Like, we get a backstory for Silva, we have a reason, and that's a big reason, and that's cool. I feel like that's everything for The Dark Knight.
Okay, so let's talk about Home Alone now. So, okay. I really don't have that much to say.
did you catch Angry John Oliver in this movie?
No.
When Bond is going from subway car to subway car, there's a guy that looks so much like John Oliver, but furious.
Is he mad that Bond bumps into him or something?
No, he's just like, he just can't believe the gall of this guy to go from subway car to subway car. And he just looks really angry and also has a hilariously British haircut. It's wonderful. Look for him. So worth it.
Okay, next time I watch, I will certainly do that. Mm-hmm. And yes, I will look for, I'll count the number of times they show fire or ice.
Yeah. Oh, I've got a pretty good drinking game for you in this movie.
Okay. Every time sky falls, you drink. Every yes. time Adele says Skyfall, you drink.
Okay. So if you're on the fence about seeing this movie and you're kind of an alcoholic, here's what you do.
What like, do I bad?
Say your boyfriend or girlfriend's like, I really want to see the Bond movie. And you're like, ugh, fine, I owe them. I'll go see this. Just bring some alcohol with you. And
bring some 1964 Mikkel Allen's or whatever it is they drink. I'm sure it's cheap.
No, just bring some alcohol and drink anytime you see fire. Anytime you see ice, you don't see a lot of ice, so that's fine. And drink anytime someone is framed in a silhouette. Like, this focus of the shot is a silhouette.
Any reflection.
Yes, also reflections.
Anytime M does not like what she's hearing.
Okay, I think we're going to kill people with alcohol poisoning. So, also, you have to, every time you take a sip, you have to have a scorpion on your hand.
Yeah. Won't raise any eyebrows with that one.
No. How much did you enjoy the casino of rampant opulence? I liked it a lot. That is possibly the most opulent thing I've ever seen in my life. Like, that casino.
It was so dumb.
It was so awesome. Like, you have to take a boat to it. Also, there will be fireworks going off. You have to stand in the boat in your tuxedo. Also, on your way in, you will pass a pit of Komodo dragons.
Yeah, don't think this is just one of those bullshit Komodo dragon pits with one Komodo dragon in it.
I know.
What do you think this is?
Yeah, the Sarlacc pit only had one Sarlacc. We got two Komodo dragons.
One of which can be used as a trampoline if things don't go your way.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought those Komodo dragons looked horrible, though.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of questionable CGI in this movie.
Yeah, I didn't like that.
Yeah. Do you ever like questionable CGI?
No, I guess you're right.
Yeah. I always do.
Yeah, I don't know. This movie talked so much about how you need, you know, physical, real things and people and stuff that I wanted cool in-camera Komodo dragons trained and juggling.
Yeah, well, the majority of this movie is in-camera, so that's cool. And yeah, I mean, the best sequences don't rely on CGI, and very few of the sequences relied on CGI. So yeah. There was the helicopters when Silva's first captured by Bond, and the Komodo dragons, and I can't really remember a lot else.
Okay.
The helicopter at the end was real, which is good.
Yep. Yeah. I did not like those fireworks, though, just because it was another use of the fireworks in place of sex thing, and I feel like that needs to stop happening.
See, I think it's not necessarily that they don't necessarily have sex, because I think before we find out that she's Moneypenny, it's certainly, I assume they had sex. Yes. And then once we find out that she's Moneypenny, I don't think, because I think a big part of the Moneypenny Bond relationship is that they've never had sex, right?
That's what it used to be, but now it's updated and everyone has sex with everybody now.
Now everybody has fuck buddies in the office.
So. That's right. Everybody's got a secretary. It's a term, right?
Okay.
Okay.
We're media students. We can make up words.
Technoculture.
So, yeah, exactly. If technoculture is a word, secretary is a word.
Cool.
Yeah. So how did you feel about... Okay, well, when Sam Mendes was announced as the director of this movie, how did you feel about it?
I was fine. I'm not that familiar with Sam Mendes' stuff. Mm-hmm. I kind of just knew him more as, like, I know Revolutionary Road.
Which is horrible. Continue.
Which I know you do not like at all.
Horrible movie.
I feel like do not like at all gets the point across.
Not well enough. I needed to.
Okay. Yeah. Sky fallible. it's kind of just this trend of putting people who are going to be assumed to do character first and action second and plug those into big franchises. And we saw that with Joss Whedon in Avengers, and we saw that with Christopher Nolan in Batman, mm-hmm. and probably a bunch more that I can't just think of off the top of my head. And I feel like that normally works.
Okay.
More often than not, it's been okay. I mean, who was it? Mark Webb and Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah.
I didn't like that movie that much.
He's not so much... I think there's a big difference between Mark Webb and the other names you've said, in that Mark Webb made a well-received movie, independent movie, that's sort of more well-known than your average independent movie, but it's still... I don't know.
Yeah, there's definitely a difference in level of prestige, but I was just putting it in the context of someone who is known for doing character stuff well.
Okay. Okay, fair enough. I have to disagree with you, Mark Webb. I feel like the things that are interesting about 500 Days of Summer and also Christopher Nolan movies rely more on the characters being sort of character types than actually like full-on characters. It's sort of what you do with those types that's more interesting in those movies. But anyway, I agree with your point that these movies have been hiring directors that with the idea that they will put characters first. Like you said, Joss Whedon and Andrew Webb, Mark Webb, and Andrew Garfield. And I agree, but I feel like Mendez was sort of the first real prestige director to get a role like this. And by when I say prestige director, I thought
Christopher Nolan directed The Prestige.
Yeah, great, wonderful. I think by the prestige director, I sort of mean somebody that when their name is attached to a movie, you feel like it's going for awards, right? And the Bond franchise actually sort of tried this with the last movie when they got Mark Foster to direct it. Is it Foster or Forster? I can't remember. But that Quantum of Solace.
Guy Follister.
Okay. Was directed by Mark Forster, who I believe directed Monsters Ball, Stranger Than Fiction, The Kite Runner. And we've sort of, people are sort of starting to figure out that he's not really a good director. But whatever, we'll see what World War Z has for us. but when Sam Mendes is attached to this movie, it's sort of a different feel than, say, Christopher Nolan getting Batman. And it's sort of being this director who has made their bones in the independent film world, like Nolan did with Memento, and then moved on to a studio movie with Insomnia, or like Mark Webb did with 500 Days of Summer and then moved on to a big studio movie with The Amazing Spider-Man. It's sort of different because Sam Mendes won, I'm pretty sure, won Best Director on his first film for American Beauty. And his other movies are these sort of like big, like Jarhead is a very big, broad movie that deals in all these broad strokes, and same with Revolutionary Road and Road to Perdition as well, which I think is a very good movie that's sort of been very underrated over the years. But the only movie from Sam Mendes's filmography that sort of feels out of the place is Away We Go, and that was sort of made as a sort of between movie. It's sort of like, well, I have time to make this, I'm going to put this together. It's like when but it's still, Away We Go is very good. I like it a lot, but it doesn't really feel like all of Sam Mendes' other work. But this feels more in line, Skyfall feels more in line with his other work in that it's sort of, it's very big, like with its themes, like family, time, technology, lurking in the shadows, you know, like all of these things that are just sort of very big, broad themes that are kind of as broad as the themes presented in like Jarhead, like War Will Fuck You Up, or his movies about suburbia, Revolutionary Road and American Beauty. Like, suburbia is bad, the middle class has mental problems and all this stuff that some people think works really well, and gives them this really emotional feeling. And some people, particularly you with your lack of enjoyment of American Beauty and my lack of enjoyment of Revolutionary Road, it's just sort of like these things just don't work to us because those movies are sort of things where we like things to be more subtle. These big budget action movies or these big characters, these iconic characters, these are the movies where you can get away with those broad strokes because these are movies where everything is done in a broad way, like big action sequences, huge budgets. And it's not so much that if you do anything well, character or thematically wise, we'll like it more, like because we just have such lower standards. It's just sort of like that these things feel more correct. Like these big broad monologues feel more correct coming from Javier Bardem playing Silva than Kevin Spacey playing Lester Burnham. They just feel more in their place. And this extremely grand cinematography, which Conrad Hall did in American Beauty, and after Conrad Hall passed away, Sam Mendes started working with Roger Deakins. it feels more correct in Skyfall because it sort of makes more sense to go nuts with the cinematography because you're making such a highly stylized movie. And I just sort of, this was something I was thinking about before I saw Skyfall in the months leading up to it, and something that I definitely think should be done now that I've seen Skyfall, is that more prestige directors should direct big budget action movies. exactly because these are the movies where broad strokes work, you know? These aren't movies that aspire to being very serious, so they somehow seem more earnest in their broad themes, you know? And I think that worked extremely, extremely well with Skyfall, and I don't know, who's a prestige director that I hate? I don't know, Lee Daniels. He made Precious. I hate his work. Maybe he can do the next Bond movie and kill it.
Okay. Well, yeah, no, you're right. And I mean, we've said a lot of the things we do really like about Skyfall, but none of them were really things that were subtle.
No.
Yeah, it was, you know, as you said, kind of these broad things and these, you know, a bit more characterization, a lot of these motifs just showing up in, you know, more than one aspect of the movie. It's not, you know, super deep into it, but it just comes across really well.
Yeah, it's all of these sort of classical Hollywood things that in movies that sort of win awards every year that people like you and I, who have sort of grown up, who were watching probably the most movies we'll ever watch around like 2000 to 2004, when we're sort of like 16, somewhere around 16, and we're watching all of these movies when Spike Jones is coming up and Charlie Kaufman is really building his name, Christopher Nolan as well, just people like that, because there was this really great boom in the early 2000s of these really good directors coming up. David Fincher as well, he's sort of a bigger name by that point, just because Seven was such a big hit in 96, I think. But it's just sort of, these are directors whose work is typically more subtle. I mean, you can make an argument Nolan's isn't, but Sam Mendes is more your dad's director, whereas Spike Jones is more your director. And all these classical Hollywood things still really fit in these types of movies. And I would like to see more of a classical Hollywood mentality brought to more big franchises like this. Like you said, I mean, Marvel has done interesting things with their directors, but I like Skyfall better than I like any of the Marvel movies.
Yeah.
And I feel like this just sort of works. And maybe since Bond is a bit more of a serious character, it works than the average movie. But I mean, it's not like these movies are without jokes, particularly this one. I thought this movie was very funny.
Yeah, it's got some good ones.
Yeah.
And Joss Whedon, he has his niche and he has a cult following, but he's not prestige by any means.
No, he's... he's nerd prestige. Like
He's
the same type of
circles. He's very deified, but not in the same way when you say, you know, prestige picture.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Joss Whedon has never won an Oscar, and I'd be surprised if he ever did, you know. I'm curious to see. I mean, we talked a lot about the influence The Dark Knight had on this movie. I'm curious to see what influence Skyfall has on future franchises 4 years from now or whatever.
Well, the good news is James Bond will return.
God. Okay, let's just talk about the things that they feel the need to put in this movie. Like the James Bond things, like the credit sequence that you don't like. The Bond, James Bond, the car. I hated the 50 at the end of the movie. Hooray, we made it 50 years. Good for you. I don't give a shit. I just watched your movie. Don't celebrate your 50 years in my face, you know? You just made a whole movie about time. You don't need to, like, boom, 50. You know? Doesn't need to be done.
I did like when the girl is shaking his martini and he was just like, that's good. Like,
no, exactly. That was good. He didn't have to say perfect, also. Okay. Quick question. This was something I was thinking about in the movie. Have you ever seen a martini served stirred? Like, have you ever watched somebody make a martini where they stir it?
I'm more familiar with them just serving it to you with a swizzle stick and you stirring it yourself.
Okay. Fair. See, because I...
when I picture someone making a martini, I picture someone shaking one of those martini things.
Exactly. So, I mean, I think James Bond over the years has had a lot of influence on the martini making industry. That's the only
clearly.
One I have.
He's run the stirrers out of business.
Yeah, but the thing I also really didn't like, I thought this movie had a really, really good ending. Like you said, you mentioned you think the last 3 minutes of the movie is probably three of the best minutes in the movie. But I really liked the last shot of the movie. I hated that they had to do the I don't even know, because they're not crosshairs, the gun barrel. There it is. I hated that. I wish that hadn't been there. You know?
See, that's one of those things though, like the opening sequence. Like it's just, I feel like it's never gonna go away, and it seems really hokey and goofy.
Okay. I think they could go away though. I don't think people would really. No, I guess I should stop.
No, they're not going away. If they were going to go away, it would have been with this movie, probably.
Yeah, and people would lose their mind if these things went away. People lost their mind when Heineken was got like a product placement deal in this movie. Bond drinks martinis, not Heineken. Calm down.
But he
does not drink only one drink. You know?
No, he does not.
Lunacy.
Used to drink Finlandia vodka.
Yeah. All right. He's an alcoholic. He probably drinks a lot of alcohol.
Yeah, they talk about his pills and alcohol a lot more in this one, I felt.
I like that they acknowledge his alcoholism. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, it makes sense. Mm-hmm. It makes it seem less like just Mad Men era, three martini lunches are standard. It's like, yeah, you know what? If you drink this much now, you probably have an issue.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's talk about it.
But only very, very broadly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Enter Skyfallvention.
I think that might even be worse than Stubblefall. So thank you for listening to The MacGuffin Men. Be sure to check out our website, themacguffinmen.com. Also follow us on Twitter, @TheMacGuffinMen. And of course, subscribe to us on iTunes. If you've made it this far, you probably enjoyed what you were listening to, so maybe you would like some more. Search us on iTunes, The MacGuffin Men, all one word. And also rate us while you're there. You can't rate us out of Skyfalls, so just give us 5 stars instead. So thank you for listening, and be sure to check back next week. See y'all.
Thanks for listening to The MacGuffin Men. Be sure to check out themacguffinmen.com for supplementary links, articles, and more. Thanks for listening.